Hi, I am Fatima Davas, and this is my podcast, Talking About Homelessness. This episode, we have had the pleasure to interview Aubrey Hasvold, who is the Advocacy Program Director for the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless. I hope you enjoy.
Okay, I have some questions. Do you want to start with that?
Yeah, that's perfect.
So, what do you do in your organization?
So I'm our advocacy program director. And so we've got a team of five, and we do, in total, we do internal communications, external communications, and public policy. And so my position lives in that public policy space. And so on the day-to-day, what I do is coalition building. So I try to get just people with similar goals in the same room or in the same Zoom room now to talk about the types of policies that we want to pass and hear from community members about what's important to them. And then I help write legislation or ordinances to be passed on the state or local level. And then I try to help get those passed by lobbying and doing stakeholder work throughout that process. And then once those bills are passed, then my job is to make sure that they're implemented correctly and are being followed. I also do a little bit of research, a little bit of education in community as well.
Okay. I would also like to know what type of services you provide for the homeless.
Yeah, so we are primarily a direct service organization. So we provide permanent supportive housing, integrated healthcare, and wraparound services. So I'll start with the healthcare aspect. We have five health center locations, mostly in Metro Denver, but throughout the state. And our main hub is Stout Street Health Center. That's our biggest one. And every year we're able to serve about 20,000 people, 20,000 unique individuals there, which is pretty huge. And the important part about that is everything is under one roof. So we provide people with dental, with pharmacy, with behavioral health, with primary health care, everything under one roof. So people just have a one-stop shop. They don't have to hop around from specialist to specialist. And then for housing, we own and operate 20, or I guess we're building our 20th apartment unit or our apartment complex. And so each night we're able to house about 3,000 households. And the permanent supportive housing model works in that it's long-term, so we don't have time-limited rooms or vouchers for folks. We want to get people housed and keep them there as long as they want to be there. We use a housing-first approach, meaning that people don't have to get sober or have a job or do XYZ to get housed, because we recognize that getting housing is kind of the first step to healing in other parts of their lives. And so once you have a roof and four walls and you can rest and you can be safe, then you can deal with health problems, behavioral problems, job search, whatever. And then our wraparound services, we have probably about 50 different services, and some examples of those are money management classes, payee programs, so for folks who can't manage their money but they might have a larger sum of money, they have somebody who can help decide how to use that in their best interest, and things like cooking classes even. So everything to make sure that people are, they've got the tools to be successful.
I saw on your website that you guys are working on long-lasting solutions. Would you care to share some of the ideas that you're working on?
Yeah, absolutely. So we definitely, that's kind of where the policy comes in. So we want to make sure that policy provides the funding and the resources that we need to deliver services and, you know, provide like housing vouchers and supports like that so that people have resources to stay housed when a crisis happens in their life. We're trying to strengthen renters' protections so that people don't become homeless in the first place if something happens in their lives and they have a better shot in court or more time to pay their rent, things like that. But one of the best examples, I think, of the way we're trying to work towards these lasting solutions is through the ballot measure that we passed in November at the Denver level called 2B. And so if you do a little Google search on that, you'll be able to probably find some information there. But that increased sales tax on non-essential items in Denver by just a little bit. I think it's maybe 25 cents on a $100 purchase, something very small. And that is going to raise about $40,000 per year for just this, to strengthen the continuum of housing. So for folks on the street all the way through up to home ownership.
I was wondering if there's any upcoming projects that will help move the homeless community forward other than the ones you've already explained.
Yeah, definitely. So, and these are, the ones I'll mention are projects that we're not working on directly, but we're supportive of. So I think that right now, because there's such a crisis and because resources are so limited, we have to get really creative and engage in solutions that maybe aren't what we want to see forever, but are really important right now. So safe outdoor space is a big one. The community or Colorado Village Collaborative and Interfaith Alliance have put together two safe outdoor spaces where people have their personal tents to stay in church parking lots and get all of those resources with case management on site all the time. So I think expanding that is something that's in the city's future and is a really promising option. And then safe parking, similarly, I think is an important solution. And I think they're called the Safe Parking Initiative. That's right. They've, over the last couple of years, established a handful of parking lots in partnership with churches and other organizations to allow people to park their car overnight if they don't have a home or don't have a house and sleep there, have access to bathrooms and hand washing stations there, and also have some security also so that they can feel safe sleeping in their car. So like I said, we at the Coalition really want to work for permanent options for housing that have, you know, roof, four walls, all of the resources that people need. But in the short term, I think that these are really important pieces of the puzzle.
As a younger kid who wants to help in the homeless community, I was wondering, what opportunities do you have for younger kids?
That's a good question. So we don't, at the Coalition, do a ton of stuff where we're engaging community members, I guess, in volunteer opportunities. But things like soup kitchens, that's one way that we encourage people to get engaged. Or something that younger people have done before is put together kits to give out. So like that could be hygiene kits, or kits with like hand warmers and gloves and food and things like that, or period kits, because that's one big issue. Like people who menstruate aren't really able to access pads, tampons, whatever else they need. So we encourage people to put together those kits and give them out. And then I know that the Safe Outdoor Spaces are always looking for volunteers to help out on just an ad hoc basis. They have signups, so you can just do it whenever. And I don't know if they have an age cutoff, but that might be something to look into.
I was wondering about the recent rise in homeless since COVID. What how is that affecting what you guys are doing?
Yeah, good question. So there are, you may have seen this report that said that due to COVID, homelessness could increase by 40 to 45%, which is huge. And we've already seen pretty big increases here in Denver, and we anticipate that it's probably happening statewide too, but hard to tell because there's not a really great way to document that. But that is definitely, it puts a lot more pressure on the systems that we have that are already not adequate. So in particular, like during these snowstorms, it's really clear where those gaps are in our emergency shelter system. There just aren't enough beds. There weren't enough beds before COVID. And then during COVID, we had to cut the capacity in half so that there could be more physical distancing in shelters. And now we're trying to build that back up and provide opportunities for shelter in community centers when we have bad weather like this. But it just is not enough, you know? So we're trying hard to, you know, provide some of those other resources, like the health and permanent housing. But I mean, even there too, like there's just never enough. I mean, it's really hard to keep up with the increasing population.
I was wondering, because I did a lot of research on homeless shelters and that people with disabilities, mental and physical, don't feel comfortable necessarily staying. And I was wondering if your organization did anything to make it more accommodating.
Yeah. So that is one thing that we have been advocating for a lot, is more options for folks with in special populations or with specific needs to be able to access shelter. Because right now for folks with disabilities, it can be like a very, very stressful thing to go into that big congregate setting that can really spark anxiety, for example, and kind of increase that pressure if somebody is having a mental health crisis. It's also really hard for folks to lay out a mat and get down on the ground and then have to get back up. Like, that's really hard for people with physical challenges, older folks. So we would really love to see a more boutique approach to sheltering. So smaller shelters that cater specifically to people's needs in that way. And beyond people with disabilities of various types, we want more places for people with families, people with partners, people with emotional support animals or pets, LGBTQ folks. So we just wanna get a little bit more tailored to humans' needs and desires.
I was looking at multiple sites of people who help the homeless, and I never really saw anyone specifically talking about kids who are alone on the streets and how you would gather them or protect them.
Yeah, Urban Peak is really the leading organization that provides services for kids. They have drop-in shelters that kids can come visit during the day and just hang out there, have a safe space, play pool, get connected with resources. And then they also have overnight, I believe they have shelter and more long-term housing options too. So if they would be a great one to do a little research on. But yeah, that's one of the toughest situations. It seems like, from what I see, it's a lot of kids who age out of the foster care system who are still considered youth that are between 18 and 24, who really don't have resources or a place to go. And then kiddos who are LGBTQ and have been kicked out or ran away because they didn't feel safe for some reason. And then they end up sleeping outside or in really challenging and kind of scary situations.
Well, those were my main questions, but if you would like to add anything that I should know or?
I wonder. Well, I guess my call to action is usually just, you know, encouraging people to treat people in a really human and real way, make eye contact with folks. If you see them on the street, say hi, and you don't have to, you know, offer money. If you can, that's great. But if not, just like be human with people. And then also to be a YIMBY. So one of the things that, one of the barriers that we have in our work is NIMBYs. So that's the folks who say, not in my backyard. They'll say, I care about homelessness and I wanna help, but don't build housing for homeless folks near my neighborhood or near my house, because it'll like negatively impact my property values or something. And that really makes it hard for us to do our job and continue to build housing options. So whenever people get the chance to just say, yes, we support that, and we support that in our neighborhood, that's really powerful and will be so needed going forward as we try to implement these long-term solutions. So maybe that's helpful if you are giving some sort of a call to action to your classmates.
Well, thank you for all the information.
Yeah, you're welcome. Feel free to send me an email if you have any follow-up questions.
I hope you enjoyed my first episode and that it was helpful. Please come back for more. Bye, and thank you.